Lighthouse just recently graduated from Emory in 2006 and then had the opportunity to work as a fellow for the Division of Nursing at HRSA for 1 year and was able to go to Geneva to learn more about the global nursing workforce shortage. And some of you may recognize me from the work I do now with ASTDN, which is the Public Health Nursing Directors Association in the U.S. So I have my hands in both pots, the public health nursing and the global nursing. And I do a little bit of work for CGFNS, which is an international credentialing organization out of Philadelphia, and they are the secretariat for the International Center on Nurse Migration. The conference that I attended was actually a call to action. So what I would like to do at the very end is just to discuss my personal call to action that resulted as part of participating in this conference, which part of that is just to be here and to present this to the APHA. When defining the global workforce shortage, I take the 5W approach: who, what, when, where, why, and how. Why do we have a shortage? Basically, it's supply and demand, as Dr. Zhu said. We have an increase in medical advances and in technology, which combined with an aging population drives up the demand from the developed countryside. And in the developing countries, we do have, unfortunately, a bit of a decrease in supply, especially in parts of Africa, especially in South Africa, where we see HIV/AIDS is being contracted at very high rates among nurses. I think the latest statistic I read was up to 60% of nurses in South Africa are currently HIV positive. And why is it global? While we are putting up walls around the U.S., we cannot tell which countries have the privilege of migrating to the U.S. and which ones don't, because, as you know, it's a universal declaration. It's a human right for nurses to be able to migrate, and there are positive outcomes from migration, as Dr. Zhu said, one of them being that the economic impact that they have on their families and their families' right to education, and they have lots of opportunities, not only just for material wealth, but the remittances can have positive factors. So these are the pull factors from the domestic, from the developed countries, and we also see some of the push factors that nurses are pushed when they migrate. There's reasons why nurses do migrate, whether it's conflict, like what Janet was talking about, or violence, or just the rise in infectious diseases and poverty rates. Judith Alton would probably kill me if she saw this picture of her that I had, but it was the only one I had on my camera, and so I just last minute put it in here. But I think she eloquently says that migration is a symptom of failing health systems. It is not the disease, that there is a bigger problem, and that is poverty, and that poor health systems are driving the nurses away. Nurses migrate between primarily English-speaking countries, the former British colonies. 70% of the nurses in the United States are coming from developing countries, and 30% are coming from developed. Of those developed countries, such as Canada and UK and Ireland, those countries are also being fed by developing nations. So it is very safe to say that the lower income countries are subsidizing their health care to the higher income countries, which is the problem. And we're seeing in the Philippines, we have about 50% of our nursing workforce is coming from Philippines. In 2004, the National Sample Survey of the Registered Nurses done by HRSA showed 3.5% of our workforce is coming from abroad. And we say, well, what's the big deal there? Because 3.5% sounds pretty small compared to UK and Ireland, but we have just out of sheer numbers the highest volume. And so when we say 3.5%, we mean 100,000 nurses, and this is data from 2004 that was probably collected between 2000 and 2004. That was before the 2005 Real ID Act, which allowed 50,000 more in. So we have at least 150,000 in, if not close over to 100,000. So Philippines gave us 50,000. Canada gave us 20,000. UK gave us 8,000. And we'll get into this more as I talk. Here we see the critical shortage of health workers. Those highlighted in dark orange show that there is a health workforce crisis going on in those countries, not just nurses, but all healthcare professionals, of which nurses comprise the largest group of. 36 of them are in sub-Saharan Africa. We also see India and Indonesia there. So it is a problem. We see that out of every 20 nurses that are trained in Africa, one of them will be working in one of the 30 OECD industrialized countries, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Agreement. When we talk about who's migrating, we often see that it is the cream of the crop, the most highly educated, most highly experienced, most valuable. It further compounds the problem by making the working conditions even worse and making other nurses also want to migrate out. New graduates are frequently being bought. We hear about that a lot, that they have bonds attached to them, but that the recruiters will easily pay the bond. Now there's some talk about the service requirements and that the U.S. will not take nurses who owe service or financial debt to their home countries. So that's great, but the phenomenon that really bothers me the most is the physician-to-nurse phenomenon, where you see the physicians working in these developing countries, would rather work as nurses outside to make more money, especially in the Philippines. There's a high number of schools now who are training doctors to become nurses. And so they're not just losing their nurses, they're also losing their doctors and their entire health systems. The impact that we're seeing on the source countries is just tremendous. Despite the billions and billions of foreign aid that we're pumping into these countries through PEPFAR, which is $15 billion, which could easily go up to $30 billion, is what they're talking about, $2 billion from the Global Fund to fight AIDS, to TB and malaria. There's little improvement in their health status due to a lack of human resources to implement the activities. That's the best way to say it. We're seeing reversals of life expectancy in some of the sub-Saharan African countries from 59 years to 34 years due to HIV, which is an indirect consequence of the health workforce shortage. As we know, that good health is needed for economic development, and economic development is needed for good health. So it's a vicious cycle. And we know that health does not occur in isolation, that if you want a healthy civil society and democracy present in your society, you need to have a healthy people before you can do that. The health workforce in sub-Saharan Africa is about 3%, fighting 25% of their global burden of disease. Compared to the U.S., it's 42 and 10. Also, you see they have just over 10% of the world population, and 26 million have HIV/AIDS. So they are in the worst position to lose their doctors and nurses to come to the U.S. or to other developed countries. And we need to recognize that. These Millennium Development Goals, there's not one that could not be positively impacted, whether directly or indirectly, from having an adequately prepared nursing workforce. So when we talk about Millennium Development Goals and meeting those goals, we have to think about the role that nurses play in them. Dr. Chan from WHO said it best when she said, "You cannot deliver health care if the staff you trained at home are working abroad." And two other things to mention about the source countries that we're seeing now is a high rise in nursing schools, especially in the Philippines, where they've nearly doubled the number of nursing schools that they have. Most of them are private since 2001. And we're seeing that remittances are just booming in general. We're going to top $200 billion this year in remittances. Money's paid from the workers who leave their country. They send money home. And we're going to talk about how they send that money home, if it's through a bank or if it's through informal modes. But despite the remittances coming in to the country, which is great for the people, it's not exactly helping the health sector, which would do more good because it would eliminate the push factor of losing their health workers. We see in the host countries here that there's an insatiable demand for nurses driven by high hospital expenses on diversion, overtime, and travel nurses. The plan is that foreign nurses will just ease the pain until the domestic supply is accelerated, but we're not seeing the domestic supply being accelerated anytime soon, and we'll get to that. And it's important to mention the quality of care. While we are We're so concerned about the quantity right now. You hear 800,000 short, 1 million short. Well, let's also think about the quality. Because when you take nurses from countries that are just training for export solely, there's a huge quality gap. And we see, especially like CGFNS, the Commission on Graduates of Foreign Nursing Schools, just had a report on their website about some test-taking fraud that was happening in Philippines. And that's not unlikely to continue occurring as we see schools just trying to get them out of there as fast as they can. This is a bit old. It's from Linda Aiken's work. I didn't have time to update it, but I think it's primarily the same. We see the highest percentage of foreign-born nurses in California, Florida, New York, New Jersey area. And I would think that that's probably about the same. Hawaii was a little bit surprising, but maybe because of the Asian Pacific Islanders. When we look at quality of care again, we think we need to talk about the RN population and the patient population, and if there's a mismatch, as there is now, we need to try and correct that. We need more African-American nurses in our workforce and more Hispanic. And unless those are the nurses that we're importing and those are the nurses that we're domestically training, that gap is going to widen and the quality of care will also be suffering. So when will the shortage subside? That's the hardest question to answer because I don't know how to answer that. That's too big of a question for me, but there's at least 800,000 just in the U.S. alone that they say we're going to need by 2020. And instead of subsiding, I see it shifting, and it's already shifting from the rural to the urban, from developed to developing to developed, south to north, and low income to high income. The only way that it is going to subside is if countries become self-sufficient and develop models of self-sufficiency, which is the hot word right now. It's basically saying we need to increase the capacity of our own nursing schools, and we need to retain the staff that we have. So how do we proceed? Well, here are 11 things that I learned from the conference, and I'm sure there were even many more, 11 different strategies that I could share with you. Self-sufficiency, like I mentioned, is done. A lot of this work is done by our UK partners, Mr. Buchan and Lisa Little, and I'd like to see more of the work done here in the U.S. It's not to say that we discourage foreign nurses from working. It sees them more as supporting what we already have, not as being our only way. And ideally, the American Academy for Nursing, I've seen lots of journal articles written that would really like to see the American Academy of Nursing come out with a similar position paper as the UK has on self-sufficiency and what is our plan for that. Unfortunately, the Immigration Reform Act that failed in Congress this summer had some very nice amendments to it for self-sufficiency, and we're seeing some today go into conference with the House that we'll talk about later that also would help us to become more self-sufficient. When we hear managed migration, we're hearing a lot about that today. We're talking about circular migration and return migration. Circular migration is where a nurse doesn't need to decide which country she wants to work in. She can work in Jamaica and in Miami. She can come to Miami 3 days a month, and she can make what she makes in Jamaica for probably the whole month, or if not 2 months, and she doesn't have to live here. She can have a temporary visa, and she can work here, for example. When we talk about return migration, we're talking about giving nurses temporary work visas for a country, like what the UK did with the South African nurses, that they would work 5 or 6 years in the UK until South Africa caught up to speed with their career ladder opportunities or their salaries or whatever was driving them out, and then they would return. The diaspora, the nurses who have left their homeland to come work in another country, frequently have not been able to go back to their home country. At least in the U.S., when we give them green cards, they're not allowed to go home and practice for a week or two because they might jeopardize their residency requirements. But now, with the legislation that's in Congress just now, it would enable them to be able to go back to their homelands and to work for a month and still stay in line for their green card, which I think is great. And then we also see mutual recognition arrangements, like with the Southeast Asian nations, that they can go back and forth and that they recognize that they're just sharing and transferring and not stealing. This is a picture of my hometown, Providence, Rhode Island. Just a reminder that nurses are sympathetic to their home and that they don't want to leave, that they are often pushed, in that when they go back, if they are pushed back, which what happened in the UK, that they go back and they're not very well respected because they left when they shouldn't have left. And their current salaries are not going to, their old salaries aren't going to be the current salaries, and they're not going to have the benefits and the vacation hours or whatever they built up there. We have some international education partnerships. This started with the University of South Carolina, Mary Black School of Nursing, partnering with a school of nursing in the Ukraine, and now it's presumably expanding throughout the U.S. to include other nursing schools. We see International University of Nursing, which is out of St. Kitts, where they do their theory there, and then they do their clinical with their schools of partnership, like I think Vanderbilt is one for sure I know of, and there's several others where they do the clinical and they actually finish their BSN. And one great program is Florida International University, which really is preventing the brain waste. When we see a lot of the doctors who come out of these countries, they come here and they're not working in medicine, they're working in taxi drivers or hotel staff. Well, this program is an accelerated program to train them as nurses, and not that they're recruiting people from overseas, just the people who are here, they could actually work back in our health sector so that it's not a total waste. Like I mentioned before, the remittances, the informal modes are still a barrier when you send money back through people or through material things. But we do see that there is an overall increase in remittances, that the banks are finally catching up, that there was $14.7 billion this year to the Philippines, $200 billion annually. And so this money is coming back into the countries in some shape or form, and that is a positive that we need to address. The country workforce database is done by Emory University and CDC in Kenya. It's just a shining example of the partnerships that we can have. They really help to create national electronic nurse workforce databases to provide the country with a reliable information system that can be used to collect data on nurse demographics, nurse migration patterns, nurse workforce capacity, that can be used by the ministries of health to assess their nursing workforce shortage and document important workforce trends, such as out-migration. You can't solve the problem if you don't know how many are leaving and how many are staying and who you have in your workforce. Nurse retention plans, we see, this is a classic example, a really gold standard example here of Mauritius, who implemented a nurse retention plan and greatly decreased the number of nurses that migrated out of their small workforce. I don't have time to go into these resolutions and declarations now, but I'd like to see that the nursing workforce is finally receiving the global attention that it needs. And you can Google them later. So what is the role of the United States? Well, we are the sheer largest importer of nurses by number, and it's an extremely political issue. I know my work at HRSA, we couldn't even talk about it. It was just nobody wanted to say anything about it because we didn't know what to do about it. But it is receiving bipartisan support. It's hard to say yes to some countries and no to others, like the UK did. It's hard to say that we'll give you a temporary visa and that you're going to have to go back. So the US is really trying to give more permanent visas out and to not discriminate upon who we take. You can see this is from 2006 World Health Report, which quoted 5% of the U.S. workforce. Same thing, it's still about 100,000 nurses, which is when you see New Zealand is, you know, has 21%, but that's a much smaller number. So you have to look at that number, not the percentage. This is our problem right here, is that we cannot take in enough of our domestic nursing students, that we are denying 44% of nursing students, and this is at all levels, whether it's diploma, ADN, BSN, that we're denying 44% of qualified applicants. And I get 44% by taking 17 plus 12, which is the number who are waitlisted and rejected of the qualified ones. And here we see that the BSN applications are also, rejection rates of BSN applications are also on the rise, 37%. And that's who we really need the most, because we know that BSN nurses go on to get master's and doctorates, and they are the ones who are going to teach the future nurses, as our nurse faculty are quickly retiring. We also see here that the reason we don't have faculty coming in is because they are not paid nearly as well as they would be compensated if they were in the clinical setting. I could say a lot about that, but I think it speaks for itself. So the Nursing Investment Act that was expanded in 2002 funds six programs currently, Title VIII nursing programs. The top one there, Section 811 AEN, I just want to highlight that this supports the preparation of advanced education, not advanced practice, advanced education nurses, and it includes nurse educators. So when President Bush put in his request to eliminate AEN nursing grants, he was eliminating the grants that support advanced education, including nurses, nurse educators, who would be the future faculty. And as we know that the nursing shortage is growing in our country, we are seeing that Title VIII funding is actually decreasing, which is a paradox. However, House and Senate appropriations look positive, 165 and 169,000, and actually it just is going to conference, scheduled to go to conference today, and the conferees came up with a budget of 167 million. The Grassley visa tax would increase $35,000 tax on all the H-1B visas, of which some of that money would go to health-related scholarships to increase our own supply of nurses. Here are the two ways that nurses can come in: temporarily with H-1B, or permanent under the green card. Schedule A designation just means that we don't have to post advertisements to compete, that we know that there is a need, that we're not taking jobs from American nurses. 50,000 were let in through the 2005 Real ID Act, which was a bioterrorism act, but we snuck it in that way to get some more nursing relief. And this amendment that's being conferenced as part of the Labor HHS bill today is Amendment 3404, which I think is highly fair. While it does allow 61,000 more nurses in, it gives them green cards, number one, and the money that would be used at $1,500 there that you see is going to be going into Section 832. It would be a new Title VIII program, the Domestic Nursing Education Account, for capitation grants to allow nursing schools to increase their recruit faculty and students. Also, it has two brain drain provisions in it, which I really like, and it's not just for nurses, it's also for doctors and for other healthcare workers, that they must attest they do not owe their native country of any financial obligations, and that they will get credit toward naturalization, green card, and avoid abandonment of residency during time spent working in countries eligible for international development, or which are qualified as lower middle income countries, or a country with special circumstances such as natural disasters or public emergencies. And I'm almost done, sorry. This Section 832 also would allow you to purchase educational equipment for audiovisual laboratories and clinical laboratories, which I really liked, because while I was at HRSA, the two programs that I liked the most were the Faculty Development Program and the Nursing Faculty Loan Program, because I think that they most adequately address the issues that we have in nursing right now. And my call to action initiative, other than being here with you today, was I presented at HRSA about 8 times for all the senior management on how we can better evaluate our HRSA programs. This is crucial because without evaluation data, we cannot show the impact the nurses are making, and we cannot get more money for Title VIII. And as you know, Senate 3369, which luckily failed, came out just a few weeks ago, threatening to cut any program found to be ineffective by the Office of Management and Budget Evaluation, called PART, and they would have affected every Title VIII program except nurse loan repayment and scholarship programs. Targeted all health professions, but only 5 other programs other than nursing. So basically, it was targeting nursing because we're not showing the impact. We're not doing appropriate evaluation. So thank you very much for coming. I know it's Wednesday and it's late, so thank you for staying. Thank you.
will take a few questions.
Thank you. Some of you know that CGFNS, which is stands for Commission on Graduates of Foreign Nursing Schools, established a testing center in 2003 in Beijing, China. And so that's essentially put the bridge between there's a supply over there, there's a demand, so you passed the test, essentially you can immigrate or get a job. So that was welcomed by millions of Chinese nurses, and quoted in the newspaper, it's the blessing of Thanksgiving for Chinese nurses, because it's perceived as empowering them, because they finally see the hope of going to another country, not being stuck in the Chinese healthcare system. So that's why it's being empowered. But as of today, there is a very limited number of Chinese nurses coming this way because of the language and the barriers and the inefficiency, because China is not an English-speaking country. But there are still thousands of Chinese nurses that are preparing to immigrate if there is opportunity. So I believe that's empowerment.
I think the Chinese nurses are
Thank you very much for coming and have a safe trip home. Thanks.